Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Hello and welcome to The Great Indoors,
the podcast which reveals everything you need to know about interiors and how to make it work for you in your home.
I'm Sophie Robinson.
And I'm Kate Watson-Smythe.
And welcome to our new series.
Woo!
We couldn't be more thrilled to be going into an incredible fifth series. We'd just like to say a huge thank you to John Lewis and Partners for sponsoring this podcast. Now, as the nights are drawing in and there's a definite chill in the air, it's time to think about getting cosy for winter.
I'm not ready. Did you know their wonderfully cosy and luxe natural collection bedding range is handmade by their expert partners at Herbert Parkinson, their textiles factory in Lancashire?
Ooh, sounds perfect for those cold winter nights.
I think I'm about ready for a nap now. But I will forego my snooze because we do have some great stuff coming up in this series. We've got a guest appearance by TV cook Rachel Koo, and her house is amazing. She's full of interior
and
design tips.
And is she
going to
cook for me? That's what I really want to know.
Oh, I think we could work on that. Yes. Do we send in requests?
Yes.
We've also, topically, got a bit of a hibernating special with lots of tips on sleep, choosing the right mattress. And it's a bit early for the C word. I can't say it.
Were you going to say it? Go on.
I'm not going to. I'm not going to.
Christmas!
On the 25th of December, people like to prepare for that day. So we will have some tips and ideas and things you might want to know and find useful. Not going to say it. And today we'll be talking colourful kitchens and colour trends as a whole.
And start us off, before we get to wallow in all things colour, we're going to give you the lowdown of London Design Festival, which happened a couple of weeks ago, where Kate and I divided in order to conquer, because this is absolutely massive. The whole of the city is taken over by talks, exhibitions, events, open showrooms, in order to celebrate everything that's happening within interiors and design right now. So I took on West London, 100% Design, and Chelsea Harbour.
I went east to the London Design Fair, which is held in one building, all divided up with a lot of designers from Sweden and Hungary. It was quite international, but there were still common themes.
So what did you spot? What trends did you spot?
Well, I mean, I think in short, if it ain't got curves, it ain't coming in. Everywhere was curves. But it wasn't just on the furniture, which we've been seeing, it's that Art Deco influence, but also on the rugs. There was a fantastic installation from Floor Story, and they've done lots of collaborations with Camille Walala, with 2LG Studio, with Kitty Joseph, who's great with colour. I'm sure you love her. You've got one of her skirts.
I've got one of her skirts, yeah. I love her stuff.
So, but that also was curves. So there were rugs that were lozenge shaped. There were rugs with sort of curves around the edges.
But the scalloping going on everywhere, isn't there?
Lots of scalloping. And there were some fantastic designs there. And the main colourway was pink and green together. So obviously we've had this blush pink, millennial pink, whatever it's now going to be called for the next season, for quite a few years. And there's been a big story about green, obviously relating to nature and the planet, but the two have come together. And although we're seeing it, I have a pink and green bedroom, in real life, we're seeing a lot in sort of pastel green and pinks in rugs, in furniture, in cushions. And also I saw it on the Norway stand. They had boxes painted in pink and green to showcase the stuff that they were there for. So that was the massive colour story. Lots of ceramic and wood, much less plastic. And obviously there was a theme of biomaterials this year. And there was one company making things out of corn husks, making flooring. So that was massive. A lot of the bio and green.
I headed off to 100% Design, celebrating 25 years. I think 100% Design, especially when it first launched, was really all about pushing the boundaries and showcasing young and emerging talent. And I feel like it lost its way a bit somewhere.
I was going to say exactly that. And the last few years, it's not been as good, but it's come back.
It's been a bit office furniture, hasn't it? But yeah. I think they've really pulled it back and they really went all out in celebration of their heritage. So it's really nice to see what the next generation of designers are doing. And I tell you what, big, massive headline for me was a massive story about sustainability, the future of the planet, the amount of consumption, and how we can reuse and repurpose, not just, you know, discarded bits of furniture or fabrics. There was even one incredible designer. She's a French lady called Clémence Grouin-Rejou. I've probably said that completely wrong. I just did it quite fast, so it sounded a bit French.
I like your technique.
And she was making furniture. She was making this kind of like leather resin type material to make furniture out of. It can be molded. She was using it for stools and tables. It looks like a black lacquer.
But it's leather resin.
No, it looks like leather resin. Do you want to actually know what it's made from?
Is it some kind of waste product?
It's a waste product because she identified that 60 billion animals are slaughtered on the planet every year. 1 billion animals are slaughtered in the UK. And where does it all go? Just goes into landfill. So yeah, blood. She's making furniture out of animal blood.
Ooh.
That's put you off your lunch, hasn't it?
Well, no, nothing's actually going to put me off my lunch, but that's, is this getting too graphic? How does blood end up in landfill? Does that not, I mean...
Yeah, no,
it
doesn't get used. So where does it go? Exactly. It has to be processed, but it's essentially waste. And I think what a lot of these designers are doing is, as I said, they're not just looking at domestic waste. They're looking at mass waste. Yeah. There was also
a potter
making pots out of bauxite or something that's a waste product of the aluminium manufacturing process in order to make ceramics. And not just beautiful ceramics, to make ceramics for plumbing and building structure material. So, you know, really, really pioneering designers. And there was another guy called Benjamin Stanton who recycles denim. Now, this came from the fact that he was seeing loads of cut-off legs of denim jeans, just the legs.
Because he makes them into shorts.
Because this guy was making hot pants to sell at Glastonbury. And so getting jeans and cutting all the legs off and just burning them in his skip. Because he just didn't know what else to do with them. So he was thinking, again, as a product designer, there must be something I can do with all this denim. So he's laminating it and using it as a material to make furniture out of. Now, talking to him, he did admit, he's like, the production process of me in my workshop layering up denim with environmentally positive or, you know, resin, if you like, and doing all the layers. He says it's so time-consuming. It's completely unfeasible as a manufacturing process. But he's almost just wants to highlight. It's almost kind of sometimes political for these designers to say, look, this is stuff we're wasting. Surely we can have a better
purpose. But that's
the
interesting thing, isn't it? Because there has been, I don't know whether it's an argument, but a lot of discussion around the fact that many people who are working in sustainable design and reusing old stuff are making products which are very expensive and way out of the price league for a lot of people. And that is true. But equally, it's a bit like the sort of haute couture fashion. A few people do it at the top and it's very expensive, but it makes the headlines and people see it.
Yeah.
And you have to hope that it will filter down and that more people will find, you know, a way to mass produce it so that maybe one day one of the big high street shops like Boots, all its packaging will be made from sugarcane waste or husks. So I think yes, we can't all afford to buy these products, which are niche and expensive to produce. But I think it's important that people are looking at it.
Yeah, and challenging the concepts. I think another really important thing to come out of it is that, you know, sustainability and recycling, blah, blah, blah. This was really attractive pioneering design being shown at one of the best design showcases in the world.
Yeah.
But the best bit for me was an exhibit at the entrance called Design Fresh, which had been curated by Barbara Chandler, no less.
The doyenne of interior design journalists, no less, who is a columnist, has been for many years on the London Evening Standard, and also was given a Lifetime Achievement Award by Homes and Gardens magazine a couple of years ago.
Wow, so she's amazing.
She knows it all.
She knows it all. And she's very passionate about nurturing the next generation of designers. So she scoured a lot of the London universities and colleges, looking for graduates, going to new designers and showcasing there at 100%. And here's what she had to say.
We wanted to have something from a lot of different disciplines. At first, when I was going around, I was just absolutely blown away by the number of young designers now who are concerning themselves with the problems of society at large. So it's a sort of social element to design, societal, if you like. So they're concerning themselves with problems of transport. As one lot of people at St Martin's who were redesigning prison cells. We had people at the Royal College redesigning asthma inhalers, somebody redesigning a fire exit route from a building. But then the aesthetic qualities were very important, because I've got a little slogan that beauty is a function.
I absolutely love that. That's your mantra.
And this was something that Alessandro Mendini said to me, very great Italian designer and very sadly died earlier this year. But I went to a wonderful show of his Golden Mosaics in Milan, and we were talking about design, solving problems and functional design, and he said, you know, Barbara, beauty is a function. And that's been a little maxim of mine, because I think that it just enters into an emotional element of us and we feel better. Beauty nurtures us. Beauty makes us feel better about ourselves and better about the world.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
So, coming up very soon, design crimes, and also we're going to look at colourful kitchens. But for now, colour trends. Where are we?
Yeah, so this is all a conversation that was also being had at London Design Festival. And one of the great talks that I went to was by NCS Colour, which is a global colour trend forecasting company. And Carl Johan Bertelsen was talking, very impassioned man.
I want to work at a colour forecasting company. What a job. What do you do? I'm a colour forecaster.
Well, they're quite scientific, people.
What does that involve? Sitting around looking at paint swatches all day. I could do that. Or maybe I'm just going to change my bio. I'm a colour forecaster. You're probably a colour forecaster, aren't you?
I'm a colour digester. I'm digesting the colour trends.
No, that's just not as cool as a colour forecaster, is it? I'm a colour digester.
I'm a colour cogitator. I don't want the pressure of colour forecasting, my goodness. Anyway, so he was very, very passionate about his job and forecasting, but I thought it was quite interesting to put it into context why we all listen to these people and what actually do they do. He talks about the fact that in order to choose colour, you need two things. You need intuition and rationale. But in order to have intuition, first of all, you need knowledge. So the stories that we hear about the colour trends are very, very important.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we were both at the Dulux Colour of the Year announcement, mm-hmm. which gets more and more sort of razzmatazzy every year.
They even had a curtain, didn't they?
It had a curtain that revealed at precisely 10 a.m. to reveal the colour of the year. But there are clues in that room. I've learnt to read them now. I remember going to it a couple of years ago and we all sat on wooden benches, which had all been painted blue. And I was drifting around with everyone else going, oh, it's lovely colour blue. Oh, look, everybody's wearing wearing blue denim outfits. Isn't that nice? And then they announced it.
Did the penny drop, did it?
No. And then they announced it and they went, the colours, denim drift. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. Genuinely never saw that coming. So this year when we went in, the first thing I saw...
What was everybody wearing? What did you see?
Well, the first thing I saw was there were lots of plants. And I thought, well, plants is a thing. That's nothing. And then I was handed a green matcha tea. And I thought, oi, oi. The clues are there. And also, I've been saying it's going to be green for years.
So what, because we haven't had a green for a while.
We haven't had green. Finally, vindicated...
So, drum roll, the colour of the year for 2020, for anyone who hasn't caught up on it yet, as said by Dulux, is Tranquil... Well, what colour even is Tranquil Dawn?
Right, Tranquil Dawn is...
Is green.
It is green. It's got a big dollop of grey in it.
It's got a massive dollop of grey in it.
It's very pale. And actually, it was the first time I thought, where the colour was announced... And lots of people jumped up and started saying, "Oh, I've got that. I've got a version of that. I've had that." Yeah, loads of people have been using
grey green.
It's very like the Farrow and Ball chromaty, which is named after that thing on the shipping forecast, isn't it? One of those, I don't know where chromaty is, but it's very beautiful and ethereal and misty.
That's very much was the feeling behind this colour, is it feels like a misty morning. It's very tranquil. It's very calm.
It's a brilliant neutral. It suddenly actually, I thought, made white look really harsh. You know, why would you stick white is really harsh. White is really harsh, but we do all default to that. So, I mean, it might just sometimes seem that they've picked a colour off the shelf, but I think there's an awful lot of research that goes into it throughout the year. And they talk to fashion stylists, they look at social media, they talk to architects, they look at the economic trends, they sort of look at, on a really global level, what's going on, from what people are talking about in China on Instagram to, you know, what people are wearing on the street in London. And they come up somehow from all that sort of hodgepodge cauldron of information, they come up with a colour. But we managed to corner Marianne Shillingford, the creative director of Dulux, and find out a little bit more about why it was this colour. And I should point out to listeners that as part of the mood at the unveiling of Colour of the Year, there was a rain machine. So it's not bad sound quality. We're standing next to a rain machine. So just bear that in mind.
We knew it was going to be a green, because green is so huge.
Just so huge as in huge in interiors anyway at the moment?
Everything green. Everything from politics to the things that we're putting in our body, that veganism, you know, we're thinking about eating a more plant-based diet. You know, everything that is fundamental to human beings is green, the colour green and the kind of like the whole idealism of green. And so we knew that green was going to be big, and we knew it's beautiful in interiors. And one of the things about green, it's right in the middle of the visual spectrum, so it's easy to look at. It's very easy. It's what we would call a neutral colour. So even though it's a colour, it works with everything. You put a plant in a living room and it just looks amazing. A green cushion on a sofa and it just looks amazing. It never looks out of place. And so we knew it was going to be a green. And one of the things that we used to distill in terms of trends in design and colour and tech is we're doing a certain amount of that, but we're looking more closely at the way people are living and what they value, what they're spending their money on, where they're going on holiday, how they're seeking out an experience rather than stuff. And we've reached this peak stuff. We have kind of reached peak stuff. And so the stuff we're buying is much more considered. It has to last longer. It has to be made well. And so this is a sort of response to that, and a response to reconnecting with nature in our homes, creating spaces in which we are trying to get to grips with what it is to be human in an increasingly digitized age, and also blurring that indoor-outdoor space and reconnecting with nature, because we're messing it up, basically. We need to be kinder to nature. So this reconnection with green, our interpretation is Tranquil Dawn. And it's a very soft green. It's perfect for homes.
So I think a really big headline that I took from Dulux and from Marianne is it's all about how we want to feel. And Dulux seemed to think we all need to feel quite calm. And
Calm down, everybody. It's all right. Just look at this wall for a bit. It's going to be okay.
We need a nice, soft neutral.
Can you imagine if they come up with neon pink and everybody goes, whoa!
Yes. Yeah, so I think that, you know, that's the big story, isn't it? It's about not just paint, obviously, because, Dulux are a paint brand, but in terms of trends, it's the colours we choose to surround ourselves with and how they make us feel. And talking about sort of psychology and psychology of colour, Karen Huller was also at the event. I think she's been doing some work with Dulux. And I'm always really interested what Karen's take is on this. As you know, we already covered her book in a recent episode. She's just written about the psychology of colour. She is an applied colour psychology specialist. So she's deeply learned.
And it's not as snappy as colour forecaster, is it?
Or colour cogitator.
But my God, like that woman myself. Knows her stuff. She yes, knows we're her just stuff. Cogitate on the colours, but she
so
knows
when
her
it,
stuff.
So when it comes to the psychology of Tranquil Dawn and the choice that's been made, this is what she had to say.
It's about connecting back to ourselves, and it's about connecting back to our heart, not being in our head, not being influenced by what other people are doing, but it's very much heart-centred and heart-centred design. And when we pick colours and we connect with colours that resonate with us, it is about coming home. And that's what I feel, that this colour is starting to reconnect us back to home, which is our home, I believe, is Mother Nature.
So, Sophie, are you coming home feeling at home with a bit of Tranquil Dawn? It's not you, is it?
Well, there you go. No, it is not giving me the feels. And this is, you know, this is what's really interesting is how does a global brand tell us all that this colour is going to make you feel this way, because it just doesn't work. And actually, you mentioned neon pink earlier. That would probably be my happy colour more than a grey green. So I think, again, it's all really interesting. And I think it's all backed up with a lot of scientific research. And as you said, you know, it's a huge kind of load of information and views that come together and get distilled to make this choice. But at the end of the day, listeners, listen to your gut and what you want to come home to. And if it's not a grey green, doesn't matter.
See, I do find it quite a restful colour. Where I sort of slightly lose it is that it is all these sort of lofty ideals of, you know, connecting with this, that and the other. You know, it's a tin of paint.
Do you think everyone's getting a little bit above themselves, Kate?
Well, you know, that said, I do like it as a colour, as you can imagine. And what I particularly liked was maybe, this is the clever bit, Dulux, I quite like the cell. So they did all these different palettes, which were the seasonal colours at dawn. So there was the autumn dawn, which was obviously for me, which had sort of dark,
much richer
in
colours
it
put
and
with it.
Black, and that I thought the colour palettes around it were very beautiful.
You know, going back to the NCS talk that I went to, 100%. Again, they weren't telling us that it's one colour next year. They too had four different palettes, of which, again, there were similar things. I was talking about coming back to nature and biophilia. There was talk about tech overload and reclaiming our humanity against the robots. You know, there was lots of
and all that
wanting
I think
to take social media vacations. There was lots of kind of headline buzzwords.
I think that is all really good. I think if you park the fact that ultimately it's about a tin of paint, I think it's very interesting to have a conversation about, firstly, how colours make you feel, because I think people often just pick a colour without thinking about how that might feel if they're looking at it every single day over breakfast in their dining room or kitchen. So there's that. But also, they're completely right in that those are conversations people are having at the moment. So how you get from these are the global conversations to put this colour on your living room wall is another leap.
It's quite a long road.
But it is all topical, and it was interesting.
So one of the big palettes from the NCS talk, which had me choking on my latte, I was really sad to hear, he says we're coming out of the chromatic stage. So these are all these very saturated brights that we've seen a lot that I particularly love, and moving towards duller, darker, and more, I can hardly say it.
neutral. WS, your time has come. Come in, Watson Smythe. The neutral palette is here.
But grey is not back, okay? He didn't say that. So you can keep that.
All those colours have got lots of grey in them. That's what makes
them
calming.
You're
and
right.
Restful.
It is. It's looking, duller colours got more grey in them.
I think, you know, I'm going to take issue with your vocabulary there, duller colour. It's not, you might think it's dull. Some people find it calming and restful, and it's their happy colour.
That's true. No, I'd completely sign up for that. And I think that what's so nice about the way Dulux do their palettes and NCS are doing their palettes is that there is something in there for everyone, actually.
Of course, what we're waiting for, which doesn't come out till much later in the year, is the old Pantone colour of the year. Because that's always a bit controversial.
It's really controversial. Anyway, just to, before we wrap up this gorgeous topic, just a few other colour trend forecasts. We had a Tile of the Year come out.
Tile of the Year from Topps Tiles, which was, the colour was navy blue, which is a very beautiful colour. But actually, that was more about the shape. Again, a sort of curved fish scale shape, which was really interesting because obviously we've been talking about curves for ages and tiles are traditionally something that they haven't been able to play that game.
They're not very curvy,
are they? Not very curvy. So they've come up with a tile which is this fish scale shape, a fan shape.
It's called the Siren, isn't it?
Siren. So that was interesting. But also, I mean, navy blue, lovely with a bit of tranquil dawn.
And they put a pink grout with it as well. And we always said we like a colourful grout, don't we, here on the Great Indoors? And then Graham & Brown, the wallpaper brand, also had a fantastic launch of their new colour of the year. It's green, but it's a really sort of deep, rich forest green. They're calling it Adeline.
And
it,
I thought they were going for more of a sort of neo-mint, which
that's
is the
their
other
wallpaper.
Fashion
colour. So the paint is a dark green, and then their hero wallpaper for next year is called the Bloomsbury Neo-Mint, which is this fantastic sort of 18th, because you know they use their archives a lot and kind of reimagine them, this 18th century neoclassical massive blousy, like oversized blousy maximalist floral print. So obviously florals aren't going anywhere.
Florals aren't
soon.
Going anywhere, and the neo mint is really interesting because it makes that very traditional floral wallpaper suddenly look really modern, because that's not a color we've seen, that kind of bright green pastel with the traditional floral print. So it's really fresh, it's really new. And I need either a new house or a new downstairs loo, I think, because...
Oh, do you fancy a bit of...
I could go for a bit of that, but only in a very small space, which is, you know, you'd obviously plaster it all over your hall.
Yeah, I've got plans.
And I'd come in and have a lie down. Have you?
I have got plans. I'm redesigning my holiday let in Brighton at the moment. And I actually designed it 10 years ago and it stood the test of time really well. There's a lot of black in there. I sort of did dark... quite early on, did the dark thing 10 years ago, and now I want to freshen it up.
With a bit of neo mint florals.
Express my inner minty aero in there, I think.
Oh no, you've just ruined it completely with minty aero. I've gone right off it now.
Anyway, finally, just to wrap up, Pinterest were at the Graham & Brown launch. Always love to know what their insights
are. Well, what's interesting about Pinterest, I think, is that all these colours of the year come from sort of, as we've said, these lofty ideals, these forecasters, they're examining what they think people will want. And actually, Pinterest is about how many people sat down with a cup of coffee at 9 o'clock this morning and looked up that thing.
I know, it's amazing,
it's really
insight, isn't
real
it?
Pinterest. For that kind of searching.
Yeah, well, it's what we're looking for, isn't it? Like, forget what everybody else thinks we should be doing.
It's what people are doing. So what are they looking at?
So do you want to know the most astonishing stat, I thought, was searches for vertical gardens was up 285%.
Is that a living wall?
Yeah. Yeah, plants growing up your walls.
Yes.
So that's obviously...
Well, you can unpick that in so many ways, can't you? We've run out of floor space. We live in smaller spaces. When you've run out of floor space, you have to start using the walls.
But I think that's a trend back to the biophilia, the need for the greenery, the connection to nature. There's another big conversation. Apparently, we're urbanising at a rate that was unprecedented. People moving into cities.
Yeah, that's true.
So smaller spaces and then needing that connection back to nature, really important. Right, are you sitting down?
Well, funnily enough, I am, yes.
Bold print wallpaper, of which we've just been talking, 400% up on searches.
Really?
Yes!
You see, this is where it all gets confusing with all this forecasting, because at one minute it's all zeitgeisty with the calming down and the neutral palette and all the bright chromatic colours are over. But actually, real people, listeners, and Sophie, clearly not me, I'm not a real person, I'm all down with the neutrals. But the real people are all over the bright, bold wallpaper.
All over the Larry wallpaper. But there you are. Those are some insights from Pinterest. So I could say chicken and egg. Are we leading the trends or the trend leading us? Who knows?
You know what that tells you, though? That's why you should never slavishly follow a trend. Yeah, because you don't know if you're starting it and perpetuating it or if you're being led in a direction you don't want to go in.
So next topic, Kate. One of my favourites, colourful kitchens. Let's discuss.
I think it's a thing.
It is a thing.
End of show. It's a thing, everybody. Get into it. No, it is a thing. because we've started to notice them. At the Clerkenwell Design Week, I think Pluck Kitchens had a lilac kitchen, and we were talking about lilac.
Lilac kitchen with yellow interior.
And Rita Koenig, a daughter of Nina Campbell, who's a columnist and interior designer, she's just done, I think it's her third collection with Plain English Kitchens paint collection. One of the colours, interestingly, is called Nicotine.
And it's yellow.
And it's, but it's a really, I mean, I'm not often a huge yellow fan, but I do quite like that colour. But I put some of this stuff on the blog earlier in the week just to see what people's reaction to colourful kitchens were, because I've been writing this story for years, and I remember writing it for The Independent years and years ago and talking to a kitchen manufacturer and saying, oh, so you can do raspberry pink, you can do pistachio green, you know, what's everybody buying? And he just went, white.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's taken a long time. We have got used to colour. And I think we're now, you know, used to colour on our walls, maybe on our sofas.
Oh, we're definitely, I think, generally more confident, aren't we?
A bit frightened of putting it on the kitchen cupboards. So I thought it was interesting to look at Rita's collection. And she talks about you need 4 colours in a kitchen.
Oh, we've got a rule. Okay.
We've got a rule.
You need 4 different colours in a kitchen. Okay.
She would say 3 or 4. One for the cupboards, one for the island, for those that have them. And then she always says, paint your stools another colour. And maybe the back of
them.
The cupboard. Or the walls for those that have them. So she's got a kitchen which has this nicotine yellow cupboard, an island in burnt toast.
Which is what, like a brown colour?
It's
blacky brown?
Yeah, it's a beautiful colour, actually. Yeah. And then other colours, I think she's got medlar jelly and candied peel, which are lovely
oranges.
Oh,
yes,
it's
like an orange. Yeah.
And she's got a very nice pink. So I immediately said to the mad husband, what about painting our kitchen chairs pink? I got the marital veto.
I bet you did. That goes up there with gold grout, Kate Watson smile.
I've got another plan, but I can't reveal it at this stage because he's in the house as we're recording this. And I need to kind of work up to
it. Yeah, you do, don't you?
So, you know, we'll come to that. I'll let you know if I'm successful. But so that would be her idea for a colourful kitchen. And so I put some of these colours on the blog and said to people, you know, would you do it? And actually I got a surprisingly positive response from people who are not wanting their kitchens to look like kitchens, or they've got open plan spaces, so they're bringing in more colour that way. And actually I didn't get a single comment saying, oh, I just want a white one. I got this from Fiona Jarman. I've been colour brainwashed by Sophie Robinson. So we've gone for it in the kitchen. Teal units at one end, wrap around pink walls, and some taupe as well to break it all up. Still can't believe my husband agreed to it.
I actually know Fiona. I can't believe her husband agreed to it either.
It sounds amazing.
Oh, I'm looking forward to catching up on that.
With a kind of neutral colour.
That sounds heaven to me. Well, I think that's basically what Fiona's doing, is she is approaching her kitchen design as you would any other room in your house.
And that's the key point.
And I think the problem is people see the price ticket of a kitchen. It's a big investment in proportion to what you're spending overall. And people want to play it safe.
Yeah.
They get the willies, they get the heebie-jeebies and think, oh, we'll just do it white or, God forbid, grey. And then we don't have to change it for 25 years. My argument is, if you're going to invest a lot of money in a room and you're going to spend a lot of time in there, because for many people, the kitchen's the heart of the home, why wouldn't you want it to be the most fabulous expression of the colours you love? And, you know, to be fair, Kate, I know I love wind you up, but for you, it's chocolate brown and a bit of a...
Always thinking about the food, me. I might go burnt toast, actually.
Bit of a salmon mousse pink.
It is not salmon, but well, plaster. I think it's a plaster pink. But for people who are nervous of that, and, you know, painting kitchen units isn't for everyone, I would say paint the walls or paint the back of the shelves or something, because that's easier to change and less scary.
Yeah.
So you can bring in colour that way. Tiles can be a smaller area, although that's harder work to replace.
I'm kind of having a love affair with like Formica worktops and door fronts as well at the moment. Formica comes in so many awesome colours, and they've really added some more modern colours to their range. And you can have plywood doors covered in it. You can have worktop splashbacks covered in it. You can have loads of fun.
The other thing that's really good, if you're a bit nervous about the colour, is you can paint the inside of the cupboard, which is a bit of a faff, but you just get a flash of whatever that colour is inside. It's quite a nice little treat, but it's also less frightening if you want to appear to be more sensible. Actually, and then you open your drawers.
Neon pink, I'm thinking.
Oh, what? There's a thing.
Neon pink inside your, you know, ordinary white high street kitchen. That could be awesome.
Right, for this week's design crime, we are handing over to our producer, Kate, who I believe was away this weekend and spotted a doozy.
Right, I'm just going to duck onto Sophie's mic here. So we went away with some friends to the seaside this weekend, which was lovely.
Oh, alarm bells are ringing already.
Well, yes. There's been some amazing chat on the Facebook group.
Was there
about
a net full
seaside
of plastic lobsters?
About seaside decor and how terrifying it can be. But it was brilliant because it was very sunny and it was a very high-end little cottage that we stayed in, Airbnb. It was lovely, absolutely gorgeous. Obviously, a lot of kind of design thought had gone into it. So, you know, it was quite interesting as we were exploring when we first arrived.
I'm a bit scared of that phrase, design thought.
Well, been on the train for a long time, popped to the loo as soon as we got to the house and opened the door and there above the loo, the actual toilet, is a tiny little kind of handwritten wooden sign hanging above the loo.
Is this going to be a rude word?
Loo.
Okay.
So it was a sort of...
What, in case you didn't know where you were?
Pretty old-fashioned little cistern thing. And in the tongue and groove, kind of beautifully sort of, I don't know, Celadon-painted tongue and groove behind the cistern, yes, this tiny little sign saying... Loo.
In case you weren't sure what the thing that you were
about to use
was. Maybe they had aliens visiting from another planet the week before.
I can just about get putting a sign on the door.
Yes.
I mean, that in itself, I think, is I wouldn't do it, but I can sort of see why you might.
Because you're in a strange house and you don't know where the toilet is.
Yeah, you don't want to open the wrong door. Yeah, but then do you have loo, cupboard, kitchen,
flush? Taps.
Anyway, it was A, bin. Typography.
Oh, it's a converging of two design crimes.
And B, it's just a completely unnecessary and weird thing to do. So obviously I thought of you both.
Oh, I hope you had a good chuckle when you thought of us. Did you take a picture?
I did.
Oh, can we put it on the Facebook group?
We will.
Oh, we'll put it on the Facebook group. Brilliant.
So I've been so tempted to leave some graffiti. Some bits of high-end place so you can't.
Right there. So time for a little summary. First up, we talked about the London Design Festival. And the big headline here is there's just a huge explosion within the design community to really take on sustainable and environmentally positive thinking with our designs. Then we talked about the colour trends and basically, as long as it's green, anything goes. And finally, we had a conversation about colourful kitchens. And we just feel like if it's a colour you love, you should just go for it. Even if you end up hiding it inside of a cupboard.
As always, everything we've talked about will be on the blogs. I'm madaboutthehouse.com and she's sophierobinson.co.uk.
And do please rate and review us on your podcast app. Special shout out this week to Nuala, who left a lovely review on Apple Podcasts saying that she has guzzled.
Oh, I love that.
I know, isn't that brilliant? Guzzled up every episode. I'm thinking Nuala will have particularly enjoyed this week because in her review she says... Sophie's passion for colour is inspiring me to think outside of my grige box as I plan the design of our new home. Absolute music to my ears, Nuala. Thank you.
And thank you also to John Lewis for sponsoring this episode, to our producer, Kate Taylor, and last but absolutely not least, to you, our wonderful listeners.
And we'll see you in the great indoors.
Actually, surprisingly colourful in my kitchen, which is chocolate brown with...
Oh, is that a colour?
I beg your pardon? That's not a colour?
Chocolate brown?
That's a colour? It's a very nice colour. It's like swathing myself in chocolate all the time. I've got a pink door. That's the most colourful room in the entire house. Are you having a go?
We just need to define what colour is, I think, between us, don't we, really?
Is that what it is? Right.